Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the program that showcases inspirational women over 50 across the globe. It is sometimes the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, I'm very excited to be interviewing the dynamic Lynn Bateson. Lynn was from a poor northern British family. She was also a sickly child who missed much schooling. Yet, she became an award-winning journalist and national newspaper executive in London. She is in Debrett's People of Today, which lists British people of influence, and has fulfilled her childhood dream of living in the US, where she now has dual citizenship. She is currently based in Pasadena, California. Lynn relishes discovering what people want to say and helping them say it clearly with passion and punch. She takes pride in explaining complicated concepts simply without patronising the ignorant or irritating the informed. She has worked for many UK national Fleet Street titles, often managing intense and fast change. She has been a top executive, managing editor, columnist, section head and reporter, and has done most kinds of journalism, including financial and consumer. Her last staff job in the UK was editorials and comment writer on two national newspapers, the Daily Express and the Sunday Express, which had a combined readership of 4 million. She freelances for British national newspapers, gives strategic advice to international companies and consultancies, conducts corporate brainstorming and media trains leaders. If that wasn't enough, Lynn has co-written a screenplay for an animated cartoon. She has collaborated on books about comedy and psychotherapy. She also writes and performs stand-up comedy and knows an awful lot about the paranormal. And I'm guessing those two aren't necessarily connected. Hello, Lynn.
Hello.
Thank you for being on Creating Ripples and giving up your time. What time is it in Pasadena at the moment?
It's about 10:30.
10:30 in the morning. Okay, so yeah, are we 8 hours difference? We are 8 hours difference, aren't we? Yeah. So thank you. So I've known you for, gosh, when did we meet? 2012?
Seems like forever.
Yeah.
Friends you recognise.
Okay, I'm going to take that phrase, seemed like forever, as a compliment. I'm going to choose hear that as a good thing, not a bad thing. So tell us a bit about your background. You're a girl from Leeds and you always wanted to live in America. When did that dream to live in the US start?
Well, I think the first dream was to live in London. The American dream was always there, but it was in the background.
Okay.
I was a little bit of a cuckoo in the nest. For some reason, I came out of the womb a middle-class child. I wanted books, I wanted travel. I was always different. And I always wanted, in fact, knew that I was going to end up in London.
Gosh.
And I always felt the pull of America.
Okay.
But of course, from my background, anything I said, people would just laugh at me.
Really? So did anybody encourage your dream or did everybody laugh at you?
Nobody. I never had any help from adults or mentors or anything. There was one teacher who performed a great service. Thank you, Mr. Glenn Denning. He prevented me being put into a lower stream at school, which probably would have been too much for me to bear. I might not have got out if that had happened.
Gosh.
But no, the thing that helped me most was journalism and journalists.
Okay.
Journalists. They were the people who brought me on, who mentored me. I was in a whole new world. People taught me how to work the system, inspired me, broadened my horizon. So journalism was my out. And I'm eternally grateful to it and to journalists.
It's really interesting when you say, was it Mr. Glenn Denning, the teacher?
Mm-hmm.
And teachers, educators, I think as they're called in the US, are hugely influential in those formative lives.
I've had bad teachers.
Absolutely.
There was one teacher who was teaching us sewing, and I was in an A stream of a very poor school, but it was the best of the scrap heap school, the best stream. And she was teaching us how to thread an old-fashioned sewing machine.
Right.
And I just couldn't get it. I'm not very practical that way. And she turned to me and said, oh, you should be in a D stream. And, you know, you can't do this. And I remember actually being really angry.
Mm.
And I remember her name too. I've never forgotten her name, but I won't give her a shout out.
Well, that's very good of you.
Yeah, but there was a wonderful series of British television ads for teachers a few years ago, and it just flashed pictures of individuals on the screen saying things like, Mrs. Brown, Mr. Higginbottom, Mr. Holland, you know.
Yeah.
And you tried to work out what it all meant, and right at the end it flashed up, you always remember a good teacher.
Yeah.
Now, I never really had any good teachers. Mm. My teachers were journalists. But Mr. Glendening stopped me getting demoted. If I'd have been pushed down into that lower stream, I wouldn't have been given any kind of education at all. I'd have been completely scrap heap.
So what is it you think that he saw in you back then?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Maybe nothing at all. Maybe he just thought I wasn't as bad as other people thought. I suddenly became bright. I mean, my parents were uneducated. They were very poor. My father basically couldn't read and write very well. In fact, he was married to my mother for 32 years and he could never spell her first name.
Oh, my gosh.
There were no books in the house. And they didn't even encourage education. It was close your books, you know, come and watch TV. Mm. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't that kind of background. I'm sorry, I've now forgotten. I'm going off at a tangent and I've forgotten the question. What do I like? We have butterfly minds.
The question really was, what was it, do you think, that he saw in you, Mr. Glendening?
I don't think he saw anything. He just didn't think I was as bad as I was. I think asthma inhalers. I began using an asthma inhaler, and all of a sudden I didn't have so much time off school.
Ah, okay,
and
interesting.
Suddenly I became brighter. Mm. I missed huge blocks of schooling.
Right.
But I managed to catch up because I was a good reader. And perhaps he saw the beginnings of that.
Yeah.
It gave me a bit more time. Time is, you sometimes have to give people that little bit more time. People learn in very different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm using my hands now, which is no good for your listeners because they keep slapping around. But some people learn, just by going up.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of learner. I sort of stumble around at the bottom, going, you know, doing a horizontal path. And then all of a sudden, someone switches a light on and I jump up.
Right.
That's how I learn. And I think perhaps when I was with him in his class, I was starting to jump up a bit.
Okay.
But yeah, the good old asthma inhaler helped.
Well, yeah, but you have to catch up in your schoolwork. So how did you manage the relationship back at home? Because that takes quite something.
There was no real relationship to manage.
But even so, as a young child, to be a maverick, it takes courage to be a maverick as an adult. But to be a maverick as a child, when you're in that home environment, it's very easy to get sucked in to the culture and the environment in which you live. And it takes quite an unusual character, quite an unusual soul, to be able to be that individual at such a young age. So what is it about you that enabled you to do that?
I wish I could take credit for being a maverick, but I can't. I was just me. I knew I had to get the hell out. I knew I didn't belong there. Okay. I felt like the stork had dropped me, by mistake somewhere. Okay. That's what I was, where I wanted to be. And I knew I had to focus and get the hell out.
Wow.
Really, from being a tiny child. Another thing that helped me, as well as the good old asthma inhaler, was perhaps television. Mm. So many people say how television is terrible and it dumbs down. For me, especially then, television was a lifeline. It was my window into another world. Right. I saw homes with people with books,
right,
doing interesting things and traveling, and I wanted to go there. It didn't make me go into myself. TV whetted my appetite.
Wow.
And I don't know why it didn't do that with other people. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, I've always been very curious. I think curiosity is one of the most underrated attributes. It usually goes along with a certain sort of intelligence which helps you make it. I always want to know what's around the next corner. I was went for a meal with my partner recently. We were in this restaurant, and there was a door there that seemed to lead to nowhere. And I asked one of the waitresses what it was, and she got no idea. And she was working there. I would have found out where that door led to within my first 5 minutes of being in that restaurant.
So that it's that inquisitiveness, that curiosity to always know what's on the other side.
Yes, and
yeah,
keep on wanting to know what's on the other side.
So do you link that with an ability to relish change and not be frightened of the unknown? Because a lot of people can get stuck into familiarity because they place an element of safety around familiarity.
That's a very good question. I actually might come across as being very, very confident, but I live my life in fear nearly all the time.
Gosh.
You just can't see it.
Okay.
And no people believe it, except for my nearest and dearest, and even they have a hard time believing it.
Okay.
But I was brought up to always be fearful. I learned fear on my mother's knee. Life was always scary. Will this or will that happen? You know, will we get run over as we cross the road? When I was starting to do things like going ice skating, my mother would say, "Oh, if you fall down, they'll run over you with the blades and chop your fingers off."
Oh my goodness!
You know, and if it's raining, oh, be careful with that umbrella. You know, you'll poke your eye out. You know how little children like walking on walls?
Yes.
I saw little children doing this, and I wanted to be like the rest of them. And I begged and begged, and eventually my mother allowed me to walk on a wall. But because I'd never walked on a wall, I didn't know how to do it, and I fell off.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my mother said, "That's what happens to you when you walk on walls." I'm now searching for the American word, mindful that, you know, we're both sides of the pond are here. But merry-go-rounds in roundabouts.
Right,
in
yeah.
The playgrounds.
Yeah.
The baby ones, the really slow ones.
Yeah.
With hand. When I went to school at the age of 5, you can gather from all this that my parents, my mother, wouldn't let me do anything. I just had to sit and not do anything.
Mm.
I wasn't allowed to play or do it, you know.
Mm.
This was also dangerous, you see. And I was so surprised that the teacher would allow me, indeed encourage me, to go on one of these little merry-go-rounds. And I got on, and it was going so fast, and I panicked, because I'd never been on a merry-go-round, and I fell off. I have the scar to this day.
Oh, my gosh.
Like a thigh. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't because my parents put me in cotton wool. It's because they were controlling. It wasn't that they were looking after me and protecting me. It was that they were controlling me, so I didn't make problems for them.
Okay.
Because life, they couldn't cope with life, and they didn't want any more problems.
Okay.
And I used to have these very, very bad asthma attacks, and my mother would never call the doctor until the asthma attack was over. Because she was frightened if the doctor came, they'd send me to hospital, and they couldn't cope with the hospital. Looking back, I should have been sent to hospital because I was going delirious and could have easily died. In fact, in parallel universes, I probably am dead. So I was always frightened. But my parents lived with this feeling that there was a they or a them that was always controlling and watching. They'd say things like, what will they say if you do that? Won't you get into trouble with them? And a lot of people have this.
Yeah, they do. It's a common...
But my parents took it to an nth degree. They would... an authority figure for them could be a bus conductor, a bus driver, it could be a very young waitress in a coffee bar. They were authority figures. So basically, my gut reaction to any new situation is fear.
Okay.
So immediately. Obviously, I've reprogrammed myself.
Well, yeah.
but my first reaction is fear, and then I override fear.
So what is it, what do you possess that enables you to override that fear?
You've missed your calling. You should have been a journalist. I'm going to come back to you on that one.
Okay.
It'll pop out as you carry on talking. That's a really interesting question.
Okay.
But I think it's, I maybe it's a... It's some sort of determination. I'm determined to succeed. I'm determined to make a difference sounds very worthy, and I don't particularly like that, and it's a cliche. I'm determined to count in some way.
Is that for your own benefit, or is that to prove your parents and your background wrong, or both?
Both. I remember hearing an interview once, and I think it was with the British agony aunt, Claire Rayner, who had a really bad background. And she said something that stuck in my mind. She said, if you have a bad background, what you have to do is use it as rocket fuel. And I thought, ooh, I suppose that's what I'm doing. Far more eloquent than I was at that time. I mean, I've had lots of horrible things happen to me, or rather, lack of good things, and some not good things. But what I try to do is suppress it, not repress, but suppress. I have a box in my head, and all horrible, nasty things and empty things get put in that box. I put the lid firmly on down on that box. I know the box is there. Very, very occasionally, I'll peep into the box and have a little root around and have a look because it's healthy and cathartic, but not to ruminate on it. I'll have a little look, which is what we're doing now. We're opening the box and having a little root around. Then I'll see if anything's changed, any lessons. I'll put the lid firmly on the box and then go go on upwards, upwards and upwards.
Interesting way to deal with that. And I'm really interested in the way you made the distinction between suppress and repress.
Very different.
They are very different, and people can get stuck into repressing, which is unhealthy. And also just picking up on...
I beg your pardon. The room, if you keep on ruminating about bad things, you get round and round and round in your head, and you're actually making a new neural pathway. You're becoming, you know, depressed and pessimistic and... this is why talking cures can actually work. Mm-hmm. As long as people don't concentrate on the bad too much.
That's the point I wanted to pick up on with you and just discuss a bit further. When you talked about bad experiences, negative experiences, or not good experiences, how much do you believe that there are in fact no good or bad experiences? They are simply experiences, and it is our reaction that dictates whether they are good or bad, and our reaction is a bit that we have control over.
There is a lot of truth in that, but it's not the whole truth.
Okay.
I mean, so that's all very Buddhisty, and that's nice, but there are some horrible things that happen to people. And you can't, you know, that's a little bit too worthy of an attitude. But yes, I do understand that. It's a bit glib. And it's the sort of thing that it's easy for people to say if they haven't been through it.
It is.
But ultimately, yes. Ultimately, spiritually, ultimately, yes. But actually, while we're living this life here, that's a hard one to swallow.
It is. So it's accepting that bad things do happen, and it's how we deal with them going forward. And as Claire Rayner said, can we use them as rocket fuel, or are they actually going to repress us as human beings and stop us from moving forward? Yeah. Or are they actually going to propel us into something actually bigger and better? So you came from this background. How did you end up in London?
Good old journalism again. My first job was on a weekly newspaper.
Right.
It was even hard to get on a newspaper. I remember, of course, being female then was made it harder. But the career advice I had, well, basically, if you weren't very bright, you were told to be a factory worker or a shop worker. If you were bright and female, they basically said banking, nursing.
Right.
If you were very bright, teacher.
Okay.
That was it, if you were female. I'm not saying the boys had much better in my kind of background, but a little bit more. I told them I was going to be a journalist, and they didn't know what to make of me. I was lucky. Again, how the hell do I know how it happened? I was 12 and I knew.
Gosh.
And I can't tell you how I knew.
No, you just knew.
But I finally got onto a paper, and it was called the Pudsey News. It was a weekly newspaper, wonderful training for journalists, which sadly doesn't really exist now. I did everything from births, deaths, rapes, murders, you know, but I always knew I was heading to London, and I didn't know how it was going to happen. And I didn't get to London until I was 28.
Gosh, okay.
I've always done things more slowly than everybody else. But I think, again, that's because I started off a little bit later. But I always get there.
Okay. So from London to the US, talk us through that.
Again, I always knew I was going to the US, but it wasn't until my 50s I got here. I loved the US, felt a great pull towards it. My partner and I would come over on vacation. I tried to get as many assignments over here. But just one day, the timing felt right, and I began to Google immigration lawyers. And it took a couple of years. We got here. It wasn't easy, but, you know, but we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we restarted our careers over here. Again, it's taking time. And I can't tell you why I knew I'd get here. Again, it's this inner knowing. I suppose I have been so blessed and lucky to have that feeling, you know, deep inside me.
Well, it's like having, it's like having that seed, isn't it? You know, when I work with clients, and I say, however tiny that seed of knowing is, just hang on to it and nurture it, water it, nurture it, look after it, and allow it to grow and to blossom, but in its own time. You know, don't try and force feed it and bring it on too quickly. Allow it to grow organically in its own time. And also let go of the outcome. Cherish it, but take your hands off the ultimate outcome and allow it to be what it's meant to be.
Yeah, I completely agree. However, sometimes I think you've got to jump off the cliff and see if you can fly.
It's getting the balance between the two.
Something I'd like to tell your listeners is it's one of those aha moments.
Ah.
Is when I was 37.
Mm-hmm.
I got to a national, and again, very few journalists actually get to a British national newspaper. I can't tell you the stats, but very few. But I got to a national, mm-hmm. and I plateaued. And I suddenly saw people around me who were not as clever as me, not as talented, in many ways not as experienced, getting the good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a light switch moment, and I thought, why's that happening? You know? And I just went, oh! And that is when I got several promotions in a row, one after the other, after the other, after the other. I just thought, I'm as good as them.
Uh-huh.
It goes back to my background, of course, all being frightened and not thinking I was very good. And these moments are quite good. The other thing is using anger occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But only when it's real anger. It won't do if it's not real anger.
So how do you make that distinction?
Well, I real anger scares the fear away.
Interesting. Okay.
I had been working 13 hours a day. I've been doing the job of several people. I've been really tired, really dedicated, and I got a pay rise of something like £500 a year. Mm-hmm. Most of your American listeners, I can't tell you what that is, what that was then in US currency. But for what I'd been doing, it was nothing. And I'd actually been doing the work of my boss, who couldn't cope, and he was earning more than me, which I was always cross about anyway. So I got this piece of paper telling me I'd got £500.
Mm-hmm.
I had a flash of anger, marched in to see the editor, knocked on the door, walked in, and sort of threw it down and said, "This is disgusting." And he looked, laughed, and added another zero.
Oh my gosh! No way! Wow, Lynn, that's an amazing story.
They get away with paying you as little as you can. But you see, I was valued.
Right.
So they coughed up.
Did you know you were valued?
Oh yeah, I knew I was valued, but I didn't necessarily think I was going to get more money. I was just showing. I was letting him see my power, my authentic
interesting.
Self.
Interesting.
That's another interesting thing, letting people see your power. again, it sometimes happens, doesn't it? It's almost like your whole body's glowing.
Yeah. I love that phrase that fear can get rid, that anger can get rid of fear if it's real anger. Yeah. And it is that spark. It's like a spark inside you, isn't it, where you kind of light up and then anything else actually disappears and you're so driven.
If you feel that anger, if you feel, that often happens when there's been a great injustice.
Yeah.
Injustices often, which is why people like the suffragettes or protesters, you're interviewing me today on Martin Luther King Day. And you look back and you see what people did, the American Civil Rights Movement. Ordinary people who, like me, probably would be too scared to do things, were motivated by the fight against injustice.
Yeah, and Rosa Parks, of course.
Yes.
Amazing woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you're in the US, you're in Pasadena in California, very different from Leeds in north of England, I have to say, in so many ways that we really don't have time to explore right now. So I'm really fascinated by what you've got involved in since you've been in the US. So co-written a screenplay for an animated cartoon, collaborated on books, which I know about, on comedy and psychotherapy. The bit that really, really inspires me is your stand-up comedy. I cannot think of anything more terrifying.
No. you're interviewing me and people are listening to you.
Oh, yeah, but I'm not trying to make people laugh. That takes so much courage.
I years ago, I had a copy editor on the Daily Express. And he would always talk about fear again. He would say a lot of people in that newspaper were very frightened of the regime, including me. And he said, no, these people don't know what real fear is. And I will clean up what he said.
Because bless you for that.
He said, fear is when you are in a prison cell and you are naked and a man walks in with a gun and an expression on his face. This actually happened to this copy editor.
Gosh.
Because he got arrested. He was a British copy editor and he got arrested in America and found himself naked in a cell.
Oh, my Lord.
Now, that is something to be frightened about. Yep. Going on stage, it's just, if you fail, you fail. It's nothing, you know. That's nothing. There's some things I find far more frightening. If I have to take something back to a store, I feel more fear. I am petrified of driving. I hate driving.
Okay.
How the hell I pass my American driving test, I do not know. Determination again. I feel more fear getting in front of the wheel of the car than I do getting on stage.
Isn't it interesting how our different view of the world and our different life experiences can dictate how we respond to different circumstances? You know, because people say to me when I'm training, I don't know how you do that. And I said, well, I love it, but I couldn't act. Whereas a lot of people who are actors are actually very shy in life. And they find it easy to take on a persona. So, you know, we're so different, aren't we? You know, our starting point in life is so different and can have such an influence on our directions and what we end up doing.
Have a go at everything.
Have a go at everything. Yeah, as you say, what's the worst that can happen?
I'd give a lot of things, you know. I just want to try and feel, but honestly, I did not find that difficult. If anything, I like the adrenaline and the stimulation. Mm. Remember, I worked on national newspapers and the deadline. I'm used to crises.
Yeah.
I'm a stimulation junkie. Going on stage, the first time when I jumped on stage, I completely forgot my act.
Oh, my goodness.
With it.
Oh, no.
I came back. I jumped on stage and just said, hello, my name's Lynn Bateson. And then I remembered the next line. And I remembered the next line. And then I remembered the next line.
Wow.
I was in the flow. And of course, I get off stage and I don't actually can't remember what jokes I did and what jokes I didn't do because I was in the flow. I knew my subject so well, it became natural.
Yeah.
And then I relaxed and went with it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if you fail. What matters if you don't try? What matters is if you don't get up after you fail. And that's the hardest thing because failing can be so tiring.
Mm. But is there really anything, is there any failure? Or is failure actually, is the only failure not trying?
Yes, but I judge myself more harshly than that. I won't allow myself to feel that I've am a success until I get what I want to get. But I'm harsher. It's what we want out of life. I don't want to. I remember, and I've actually told you this story before, but I once interviewed a life coach who said she could coach me.
Mm-hmm.
She was wanting publicity. She was wanting me to write about her.
Okay.
And it was actually, I was doing a piece for the career section of the Daily Mail. So I said, okay, I'll let you coach me. And if you're any good, I'll write about you.
Mm-hmm.
And she spent about an hour not trying to help me get what I wanted, but trying to make me happy with what I got.
Okay.
It's not the same thing. She was brainwashing me into being happy with what I got. Now, while I admit, interesting word admit, that we have to be grateful, we have to acknowledge that we are better off than other people and take pleasure in minor things in life. I can be happy eating a plate of broccoli, which I'm particularly fond of, or a glass of champagne. I get a lot of pleasure out of simple things. But I wasn't having this life coach tell me I should re-label myself as a success because I hadn't then, and still not now yet, achieved what I wanted.
Mm.
I, at that time, I was in a bit of a, not backwater, but I was in a certain area of journalism that I wanted to break out of. And I did it, by the way.
I do not doubt.
It took me years. And people said, you're not I'd been pigeonholed into financial journalism.
Right.
Which I was accidentally very good at. Because I found it difficult, I had to learn before I could write about it. And therefore, I had the ability to write it in plain English. Therefore, people understood what I wrote. Which actually meant that people on the newspaper liked dealing with me because they understood when I would comment on a story, is this important or not? And I would explain, you know.
So, Jess, I just want to interject there. That comment from that life coach, did that bring up, did you see any correlation or connection with that comment to your parents and the messages that were projected onto you as a child? In other words, this is your box. These are your limitations. Don't expect to come out of them.
Yes, yes. I mean, coming from a very different angle. I mean, my parents, my mother in particular, never had any ambition, with one exception. She wanted what she called was an easy going on, her northern phrase, which for her meant lack of worry about money, lack of anxiety. Another little story for you. I had a big romance that went wrong when I was in my 20s. And I never showed any emotion with my parents, but on one occasion I burst into tears. And my mother said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And, you know, I thought, what is she talking about? I, you know, I've broken up with this guy and she's asking me what's wrong. And then I realised that she thought I was pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
I suddenly, you know, again, I suddenly realised, I said, it's all right, I'm not pregnant. And she said, oh, what are you bothered about then? What's wrong? As if that would have been caused the concern. But there was no, I had no emotional life. It was not important. It was getting through the daily grind. So it was very different. But yes, it was make do, don't get out of your box. It was all those things. But this life coach, I mean, I remember saying to her, well, if you want, I'll write up my experience, but you won't want me to write at all. That's the sort of coaching I do not, you know, it's cheating.
Very good point.
It
yeah.
makes me and very it, angry.
It's also working to the coach's agenda, not the coachee's agenda.
Yes.
We're running out of time. I mean, thank really? God you weren't part of the 25-minute interviews, because I'm so going to have you back. We haven't even touched on the paranormal yet. But
I'd love to talk about that.
So we'll have to have you back for that one. That could be a whole 40 minutes on its own. But just to finish off, you are a shining light. You know, I saw that when I first met you. You are like a shining light. And it's that shining light inside you that has got you to where you are now. So what are you going to do with that shining light? How does North America benefit from having the shining light of Lynn Bates and living there?
Well, I'm adding more fuel to the rocket.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, we'll have to have you back to find out where it's landed.
It basically never give up.
Yeah.
And always strive for more. Always look for more and keep on trucking.
Fabulous. Thank you, Lynn. That's a brilliant phrase to end on. Thank you so much. You have been listening to Katie Day and Creating Ripples. Be sure to keep listening in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.